Y'all should make that easy like that all the time. What else are you supposed to do with it? You dingbat. Like, hey, I'm going to write my name on this ticket, and I'm going to take it home and wash it. Maybe I'll win something. All right, so you guys have seen, like, the old school black and white TV shows, right? Yeah. So think back to the show, the last one you watched, and think about the house that's in that show. Okay, so like the Waltons, or like Leave It to Beaver, or even if you go back a little further than that, like Bonanza. This is like my entire life at my parents' house, legitimately. So I made fun of them for years. I have to go in the rain. My dad's real brilliant. He tells me, Aaron, there's this really good sale on this TV. So we drive all the way to Arlington to go get this TV in his cute little Camry. And he buys a 48-inch flat panel TV, and I'm all excited. Dad's moving into the new world. First of all, it starts raining on the way home. Then we get home, and the first thing he does is turn on Bonanza. Now, y'all don't know what that is, but it's one of those TV shows that was made in the square. You know, it's not rectangle anymore. So, like, 10 years later, there's, like, lines burning in the side of Dad's TV now from watching on a square TV. I don't understand why we would get widescreen TVs to watch square. Okay, I have no idea why I told you that. So, anyways, in the early days, they built houses with giant front porches. Okay, y'all like got this picture in your head of like grandma and grandpa sitting on rocking chairs on the front porch, right? Know what's going on here? So, normally, on a normal summer night, tonight, whatever, you'd sit on the front porch, you'd have a conversation, you might yell across to the neighbors or something like that. But the whole idea was you would have this relationship with the people around you because everybody was out on their front porch, okay? Think about your house today. How big is your front porch? Yeah, most of you are like me. It's like, what front porch? I might have the biggest front porch in the whole room, actually. Like, most people, it's just a walkway, right? Maybe like a second little piece of concrete. So we're legitimately, in today's era, we design houses with back porches instead of front porches. Privacy, seclusion, trying to stay away from people. Like, you can legitimately drive home, click the remote for your garage door, drive into your garage, shut the garage door, and never step foot outside your house. Why do we do this to ourselves? Why are we in such a need and a rush and a focus to be shut off from the rest of the world? Because the world's terrible? It's a scary place. Tristan's in his room like this. More like rocking back and forth. I can't do that. I'll fall over. Stool. So, God desires something better for us. He desires something more. All right? Go to Hebrews 10. Oh, I got two. Man, there's no more riot here. After. All right, Hebrews 10, 24 and 25. Go for it. So, what does this encouraging and this motivating look like if our houses are designed for privacy and seclusion? What does this look like where we're supposed to motivate each other and encourage each other if our houses are built with privacy and seclusion in mind? Get out the house, invite people over. But if we have people over, or if we really wanted people to come over more frequently, wouldn't we have a front porch for them to hang out at? I think about it perfectly. So the house Emily and I are in, I barely have, I walk out of the back door and it's like a walkway to the back garage. There's not even a porch there at all. I have a little bit of a front porch. There is nothing about my house that is designed to entertain people. We use the driveway, which is very small too. But there's nothing designed to entertain people. So I think about Glenn and Shelley's house. The entire backyard is set up and designed for entertaining people. You walk out, there's a walkway. It walks down to this other little brick lay thing where there's Glenn's two grills and all the chairs and stuff. It's specifically designed to be able to entertain people. How do we encourage and motivate people if we never entertain, never, what does it say, meet together with one another? What would Jesus have done if he would have lived in a house like most of ours? Not been there. So Jesus is a carpenter. I'm pretty sure he's building a front porch. I think that's going on. He's I want people to come over. I'm going to build a front porch. Or Ivy said, I think he's just not going to be there. Hey, I'm just not going to be at my house. I'll show up and I'll sleep. I might eat once in a while, but that's about it. So, the thing is, our culture has designed this need and this desire for seclusion inside of us. They've allowed us to understand and believe that this cute little LED screen that we can have in front of our face allows us to connect with people around us. Okay? I'm pretty sure my wife knows more about all 800 of her Facebook friends than she does about me. And yet we live together because she has this connection with people that she sits there on a screen but never has to leave the house. So it's okay to sit inside seclusion and pretend that we have relationships. I got 400 likes today, so I have friends. But how many times, y'all heard some of this at camp, how many times do you sit there at night by yourself just thinking, I feel so alone. I feel like I don't have anybody I can talk to. I don't have anybody I can connect to. You're just kind of by yourself. Yet there's 1,000 people right there ready to go. Because that's not the actual person-to-person connection we're looking for. So what do we do? Okay. The researchers call this an epidemic. What's an epidemic? An outbreak. Okay, it's close. What's an epidemic? Something big that happens. So the dictionary describes it as a widespread occurrence of an infectious disease in a community at a particular time. So how do you solve it? How do you solve an epidemic? Find a cure. What'd you say? Seclusion. Okay, so the epidemic of seclusion cannot be solved with seclusion. Okay? Sometimes you can't do anything. When the bubonic plague broke out, there was kind of nothing that they could do. They were working to find a cure, but sometimes it was if you come in contact with these people, you're just going to die. It's just how it's going to happen. But if you're sick, what's your ultimate goal? To get better. Okay? So we have an epidemic of seclusion. How do we get better? How do we get healed from this epidemic? Go outside. Build a house, a big front porch. Go to James 5. Break your cell phone. Man, I legitimately have this dream of one day setting an altar up here, and we're all going to smash our cell phones with sledgehammers. Hey, you can have the backup all you want, but I'm taking the SIM card with me, so. At the back? It's just a dream I have one day, just setting up an altar and saying, you know, hey, God, we love you more than these phones. And just James 5. What? All right, verse 16. 1, 6, 16. Yep. Yeah, that's it. Go. So, we need to confess our sins to each other so that we all have some wonderful gossip to talk about the next day at school. Right? So, we need to confess our sins so that they can be prayed, so they can be lifted up, so we can motivate and encourage each other to be healed from this epidemic. Okay? It's really hard to sit and like, you don't want to type this stuff. Okay? It doesn't really work well. It's something you want to have an actual communication with. Okay? Healing comes from this. Sometimes we just need to get it out sometimes. Man, I had the biggest blow up at my parents today. I hate them right now. Sometimes we just need to get some of this stuff out instead of bottling it all up. And I'm not talking about putting it on, you know, Facebook. God, that drives me crazy. Parents, people put things up. I just hate all the people in Walmart. They're just stupid. Stop going to Walmart. Don't put it on Facebook. Just don't go. Whatever. Anyways, so last week we talked about Bible study a little bit. Disciplines to make this the best year ever. Today, we're talking about accountability. So what is accountability? Get ready. Here we go. All right, your thumbs better be ready. Proverbs 27:17. Okay, Troy told me last night, I only had 3 scriptures. I was going to make it easy on y'all. He told me last night that wasn't enough. So we're going for it. I think I've got 12. So, oh, 27:17, yep, 27:17, yeah, stand up, this is killing me. What in the heck does that mean? You can rub off on one another. Okay, so next year we're going to take a trip to Scarborough Fair, and I'm going to let y'all watch how a sword gets made, because there's no rubbing and nothing. What does that mean? Iron sharpens iron. So, how many of you guys have ever watched your parents sharpen a knife? You have what? Hey, Cutco needs to be sharpened too. They just come out and do it for you. So what do you use to sharpen a knife? A knife sharpener. What's in the knife sharpener?
Iron.
Maybe. Maybe. So the metal, the rock, the stone is used to sharpen the knife to make it sharper. You're not using like paper, right? It destroys it. What happens when two swords hit each other? Okay. So, if iron sharpens iron, what's the other half of it? A friend sharpens a friend. So, what is our job in this process? What is accountability? Hold something to somebody so they get better. Okay. I'm good with that. Yeah, if you go to like Scarborough Fair or something and you're watching the guys and they're like trying to sharpen an axe or something, either they're doing it with their foot or they've got a motor that does it, but there's a wheel that turns and they'll take the blade and they'll run it across the wheel and sharpen the edges down. So we've got to be that place, that thing that our friends can be held up against to sharpen them. Okay? The dictionary definition for accountability, an obligation or willingness. This one's going to sting, y'all. To accept responsibility or account for one's actions. This means you got to have an accountability partner. Because somebody's going to look at you and say, hey, why did you do this? And you get to what? I just told you. You get to what? And I get sharp. No. Accept responsibility for your actions. Okay. Somebody can ask you the tough questions. We're never going to improve. We're never going to get better if we don't allow people to ask us the tough questions. Hey. I'll get there in a minute. So I promise you this. Okay. You develop one relationship, one legitimate, accountable relationship, and it will change your life forever for the better, without fail. Proverbs 18:24. All right, Ethan, go. 18:24. So what kind of friend are you? One that destroys or one that sticks closer than a brother? Okay. Maybe the better question is, what kind of friends do you have? Do you have the friends that destroy one another, or do you have the friends that stick closer to than a brother? Like, do you have friends that when everything in the world is going wrong and it's 3 o'clock in the morning, you can pick up the phone and they will be there? Or do you have the ones that will be like, hey, bro, your problems. Catch you tomorrow. We need friends that are going to build us up, that are going to make us better, that are going to stick closer than a brother. If they're not going to be willing to stick close enough to be sharpened or to sharpen us, then they're not worth our time. Deeper friendships equals a better life. Ecclesiastes 4:9. This one won't be so quick. As everybody sits there trying to figure it out. It's on the other side, Troy. Wow. Yeah, Christian, you don't count your cheating. There's like 15 Bibles around and you're the only one with a phone. Ecclesiastes. Philemon. Ecclesiastes. Ezekiel, what? No. I'm not doing Ezekiel again tonight. We'll get there in a couple months. I promised Christian I would not talk about sex this time when his girlfriend was here, so we're not going to Ezekiel. That's not going to happen. So, you weren't at camp. Ask the kids at camp. We'll tell you about it later. Notice how Kristen's got a smile on her face this big. She's like, well, you don't want to know. Ecclesiastes 4:9. Well, then go.
Two are better than one because they have a good
ESV. So, two are better than one because they can help each other succeed. Accountability improves the quality of your life. It is seriously difficult to do life on your own and be successful at it in anything. Like, there are so few people in this world, they can tell you all they want to that they're self-made millionaires or self-made prodigies, but that's really not the case. Because at the very least, they had parents, or a parent, or a grandparent, or some sort of an influence that caused them to be the way they are. Like, people don't just wake up one day and go, I think I'm going to be a millionaire, and I'm going to do it with nobody's help. That doesn't happen. Okay? Even these lunatics on YouTube that we're all infatuated with, they still need us to click the subscribe button for them to get famous. It's the what? I'm gonna not argue the income revenue model of YouTube with you right now. So, Proverbs 12:15. No, I'm not gonna argue about it. Proverbs 12. Yes, we were just there. Why are you whining? I'll tell you later. Proverbs 12:15. Proverbs 12:15. See, you miss all the good stuff when you don't go to camp. I had like every kid in the room going, they were shocked it was in the book. Read it. Why are you good? So, how many times have you thought, hey, I'm going to do this and it'll be okay, and then it wound up bad for you? And most of the time, there's a certain group of people over here, they're called parents, and they're telling you, if you do this, it's going to be dumb. Right? Normally, that's how it works. So, read it again. So what would happen if we had an actual relationship, an accountability partner, somebody in our life that we actually could rely on that would sharpen us and build us up, that we could say, hey, you know what? I think I'm going to date this girl. What do you think? And I could look at you and be like, bro, I'm telling you, that girl is crazy. Stay away. Okay, let me give you an example. Ethan, what happened at camp with a certain young lady that I told a group of five guys to stay far, far, far away from? It went bad. What had happened if one of y'all decided, like, not to pay attention to me? It would have been way worse. Sometimes these people that are older than us realize what we're about to go through and want us to avoid it. But if we don't listen, it's going to go bad for us. Okay, those that weren't at camp, I'll fill you in real quick. Basically, there was a girl. I told the guys, she's bad news and stay away. Next to last day at camp. During free time, she looked at one of the guys. She said, hey, I'm horny. Let's go to your room. I told him like 2 days before that, I said, she's bad news, stay away. Nothing happened, okay? Do what? Here's what was funny. This is how great this is. This is how good God works. He comes to me and he tells me this, and he's like, man, I thought about it because I knew you'd be out doing something. We had the whole cabin to ourselves. Everything would be good. And I say, hey, you want me to tell the reality of the picture? I was in my room at the time, and I would have seen y'all walk by and wondered what was going on, but he had no clue. But I see these things, like we see the pits and the holes in the road that you're walking down, and we try to save you from them. Okay, hey, it's probably not a good idea to cheat on this test. It's probably not a good idea to not study because it's going to come back and bite you at some point. We see these things, but as teenagers, and I do it myself half the time, we think what's in our head is right, no matter what. And then when we do it wrong, we hear those wonderful words that we all hate so much, I told you so, and we get mad. What if we like allowed ourselves for our lives to be spoken into instead of getting like defensive about it? Would it really be somebody controlling your life or just trying to keep you from doing stupid? Well, obviously you're not going to pick somebody that's stupid. But your reason and their reason don't have to line up because they're smarter than you. Yes, pretty much always. Yeah, for real. All right, Proverbs 27:6. Proverbs is the wisdom book. What I'm giving you is wisdom. It's almost as if the two go hand in hand. Somebody made what? A nagging wife is like a steady rain. Yes, it drives you insane. Pitter patter on the roof. Pitter patter on the roof. Nagging wife. Anyway, Proverbs. All right, so somebody. All right, so we've got the English Standard, we've got the New Living. Somebody give us the 2018 version of what that means, not the CSB. The 2018 version of what that means. No. Yeah. All right, hang on. Let's give Ethan a shot. I'm ready to make fun of him. Pretty much, yeah. There are going to be I can't make fun of you when you actually get it right. Like, the 1 out of 10 that you get it right, I'm going to just let you be there, okay? So, there are going to be times in your life that your friends are going to create hurt inside you because they're going to bring something up that doesn't feel good. And if you've never had it happen, I'm telling you, it doesn't feel good. It hurts. Like, whether the fact that they're telling you you're being dumb or the fact that you realize you're being dumb, part of it doesn't, it doesn't feel good. But that doesn't last as long is what can happen from your enemies. So, real friends tell you what you don't want to hear. James 5:16. Oh, did we? 5:16. I'm glad somebody was paying attention. She's still not going to get it, Troy. So accountability adds hope and help when you're hurting. Like, the Bible says where two or more are gathered in my name, there I am. So what if we, like, join together in praying over these things instead of just trying to do it all on our own? Maybe we could more easily overcome it? Maybe not. So, deeper friends equal a better life, which equals a greater impact, which equals people meet Jesus, which equals lives are changed. Basically, here's what it is. Accountability is giving somebody permission to hold a mirror up to your life. See, I don't know how you guys are, but I know people that refuse to have mirrors in their house because they don't like the way they look. Don't we do the same thing with our overall lives, though? Like, we don't want to have people look into it. We try to put on a face. We don't want people to see what's actually going on inside. Like, accountability is having somebody hold a mirror up to us and say, hey, take a look at what this looks like. Take a look at the damage that this is doing to your life. But the other part of that that turns around is, how many times have you been going somewhere, doing something, and somebody's looked at you and said, hey, nice hair, nice clothes, nice whatever. What's the first thing that you do?
Thanks.
What'd you say? You check yourself. So there's the other side of accountability that shows up and says, hey, man, I'm so glad you're doing this well. Keep doing it. What's helping you in this process to do this well, because I'm struggling with it? It's not always a tear down. It's a build up as well. Go to 1 Samuel 12. So, here's the backstory real quick, okay? David has just committed adultery, okay? He rolls up on the rooftop, sees Bathsheba. He's like, girl, how you doing? Calls his assistant helper people. He's like, go get her, and I want her, okay? So, he has an affair with her, and then he realizes, oh, dang, I'm in trouble because she's pregnant. Ruh-roh. So he turns around from there. Her husband's at war. So he's like, I got this brilliant idea. I'm going to bring the husband back, and I'm going to get him to sleep with her, and they'll just think it's his baby. We'll all be good. So the husband comes back, and he's like, no, this isn't right. I'm supposed to be out fighting the war, not here. I'm not doing this. So then David gets even more mad, and he's like, fine, I'll tell you what's going down here. I'll just send you the front lines, and I'll just get you killed. That way we ain't got to worry about it. Okay? So that's what's going down. We're going to go 1 Samuel 12. I should probably get there. That would help. I can't read it if we're not, I'm not there. All right, whatever. Somebody read 1 through 7. It's going to kill you. I don't think so. Okay, let's try this again, since Christian can't read. All right. Yep, hang on. Did I screw this up? It is. It's second. It's in my notes wrong. I apologize. All right. I got it. I'm going to read it. We're going to be done messing with it, because I can't write and Christian can't read. So we're good. Well, at the end of the day, we're screwed. So 2 Samuel 12. I hit the 1 instead of the 2 on the keyboard. I apologize. Here we go. So the Lord sent Nathan the prophet to tell Daniel this story. There were two men in a certain town. One was rich, one was poor. The rich man owned a great many sheep and cattle. The poor man owned nothing but one little lamb he had bought. He raised the little lamb, and it grew up with his children. It ate from the man's own plate and drank from his cup. He cuddled it in his arms like a baby daughter. One day a guest arrived at the home of the rich man, but instead of killing an animal from his own flock or herd, he took the poor man's lamb and killed it and prepared it for his guest. So at this point, David's furious. As surely as the Lord lives, he vowed, any man who would do such a thing deserves to die. He must repay four lambs to the poor man for the one he stole and for having no pity. So here's Samuel telling the story. Hey, this bad thing happened. He's telling it to the king. Daniel says, this dude is going to die. That's what's going on. What is Samuel's reply to David? Then Nathan said to David, you are that man. The Lord, the God of Israel, says, I anointed you king of Israel and saved you from the power of Saul. Basically, he goes on to explain to him what he did. We all need somebody in our life like a Samuel that can show up and go, hey, you got mad at this over here, but you acted the exact same way over here. Okay, in that James 5:16, Troy, flip over there real quick. Read it. Okay, my bad. I did it again. Hebrews 10. I'm telling y'all, man. So I generally write most of my messages about 3. Okay, anyways, 24 and 25. Here we go. There's a reality of this picture. Hebrews 10, 24. All right, so the King James word in there that fits when I memorized this way back when is spur each other on. How many of y'all have ever seen a spur? Or at least haven't, even a picture is good. Like, I understand if you're not. Yes, the spur that goes on the boots. What's it for? What? No. I like Troy's word, motivation. So, Emily and I go on vacation this summer. Here's how this works. They go around, when you go horseback riding, they go around and ask, like, hey, how many times have you ridden a horse? So they did all the women first. Emily's like, a couple. So he's like, all right, here, I'm going to give you this horse. Hey, guess what? I'm telling the story. So, whatever. Either way, comes around to me. I tell him, he assigns me this horse. Now, you guys have to understand, we're on the beach. This is supposed to be a sunset horseback ride on the beach, like romantic and stuff. First of all, there's like 40 people there, okay? So, not romantic at all. Second of all, the horse that he assigned to Emily is the slowest one in the whole stable. The horse they assigned to me is normally a guide horse and the fastest one they have. So we're going to do this romantic sunset beach horseback ride on opposite ends of 40 people. So we get started and we're riding down a little bit. We've all got to go single file. And about this time, I keep looking back and Emily's just kind of sitting there. I'm like, what the? So I asked the lady, I was like, hey, can I go to the back? She's like, good luck getting that horse to go to the back. So I'd stop the horse, wait for Emily to catch up. So then we're sitting there. My horse goes like this. Here's what Emily's horse does. So, like, no matter what happened, it was like this increase. So then we're down at the beach. And I'm like, hey, you can take your horse in the water. So I just yanked the reins over and I'm running through the water, getting all wet, having a good time. I'm like, honey, come on, this is great. She's like, straight up goes the other way. I'm like, what the heck is wrong with your horse? The whole time. No, really, the whole time. So I'm riding with Emily. The whole time I'm yelling at her. I'm like, Emily, kick the horse. She's like, I am. I'm like, no, kick the horse. She's like, I'm like, I'm about to get off my horse, kick your horse, and then come catch you. So the idea behind spurs is you don't have to kick them so hard. It's like there's automatically a point there. But if not, you have to not do what Emily did and kick the horse. This entire, like, area here is covered in muscle and stuff on the horse. But like Troy said, it's motivation. It's like, hey, you will do what I say when I say, or I'm going to kick the crap out of you. Okay, that's how this works. So we're supposed to spur each other on to righteousness. So literally think about that for a minute. Sometimes that's going to be painful. Like, Troy's got boots on. If this dude puts spurs on and kicks me in the side, it is going to hurt. And I'm going to be pissed. But it's probably, I hope, for my benefit. Because I did something dumb. And he's hoping that I don't do it again. We've got to find an accountability partner, somebody that can speak into our lives. Okay? We've got to create this habit. We've got to start moving forward in this if we're going to be the people that Christ has called us to be. Okay? Jesus didn't do what he did by himself. He had a group of 12 people around him. Okay? He's in communion with the Father at all times. And Jesus was the one that stood there and said, "Hey, Peter, why did you deny me 3 times? He's spurring Peter on to righteousness. He's telling him, "Hey, you need to be better. I've called you to be better." He tells him, "On you, on this rock, am I going to build my church, and you deny me 3 times. We've got to find that person. It's got to be somebody that says, "Hey, how are you doing in your Bible reading this week? Man, I screwed it up. Hey, do better this week. How's your prayer life? It was all right. I did okay for a day or two, and then I just kind of quit. How's your relationship with your parents? Dude, it's awesome. All right, congratulations on that. How's your relationship with your girlfriend? Bro, I was in her pants last night." "You were what?" No, that doesn't fly. We've got to have somebody that holds us accountable and keeps our standards where they need to be. Or what did it say? "The ways of a fool are right in his own mind." At some point, this is going to bite us. And it bites hard. Okay? Your parents know more than you. They're right 98.5% of the time. The other 1.5% of the time, you're not right either. Okay? Listen to them and learn from their experiences and their wisdom. Find an accountability partner. Read your Bible, and you'll have the best year you've ever had. You can dismiss and go into your pretty little small groups now. In small groups, you're not there yet.